We're all familiar with those early scenes of Aboriginal people coming face to face with the first fleet. But what happened next? In between that moment and the sad decades of stolen generations and racist government policies, Aboriginal people in Sydney didn't just fade away. They continued to live and keep connection with the land while surviving and even thriving among new colonial culture. It's a lost century of urban Aboriginal history and one that historian Paul Irish uncovers in his book Hidden in Plain View. Annie Haswell asked him why it's taken so long for these stories to be told.
A lot of the histories until, you know, relatively recently, the last 20 or 30 years, have been about European progress, so Aboriginal people have not been featuring in those histories. And in Sydney, it's especially the case in Sydney because it's considered to be colonial ground zero. I mean, this is where the Europeans first arrived in Australia and set up their first camp. And we also know that a year later, a terrible smallpox epidemic swept around Sydney Harbour and far beyond and killed a lot of people. And I think it's been convenient for people on both sides of sort of wanting to ignore or highlight Aboriginal history to talk about that destruction, which is obviously important to know about. But I guess the thing that's been forgotten in that is the people who did survive. And the story that I've traced in Sydney is one of a group of people who've never ceased to acknowledge and identify with Sydney, but who obviously don't live the same way now as they did 200 years ago. But it's really their story of how creative they were in meeting the challenges of a huge colonial city on their doorstep.
So would you say that the gap that you identify in your book, when Aboriginal people appeared to disappear altogether, was that because of the Aboriginal protection policies?
No, not really. It was actually a bit before that. I think what was happening by about the 1850s and 60s in Sydney was that people were being regarded as the last of their tribe. And you would often find articles written in the newspaper to say, you know, the last of their tribe has just died and that's the end of the line sort of thing. But what they're really referring to is the last of what the people at the time regarded as being fully tribal Aboriginal people who were born before the arrival of Europeans, who still spoke their language fluently, who still knew their stories. And it completely ignored anyone who had mixed ancestry. It ignored anyone who lived in a more mixed existence of embracing some European ways of life as well. But the important thing is that those people, in their own ways, were still connected to Sydney. They hadn't ceased to be Aboriginal. They might not have been living the same way, but they were still very much identifying with Sydney. And it was that wasn't being recognised.
It's also a story of resilience and survival, which I guess goes against the victim and the dying race myth.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'm just in awe of the people who were able to survive in Sydney. I mean, they were all descendants, children, or perhaps had experienced themselves the absolute carnage of this smallpox epidemic. Many people would have lost numerous family members. Somehow they managed to regroup themselves and not only find a space for them in this city that relentlessly grew and grew and grew throughout the 19th century, but they found a new way to live that did not turn their back on where they were from at all. They continued to marry and live and move within communities that they were previously related to. And that shows a great deal of continuity and a great deal of confidence, I guess, in their identity. But at the same time, they were also remarkably adaptable to their new circumstances. They got to know Europeans, and it was to their strategic advantage to do so. They got hold of fishing boats and started to fish commercially and also run commercial tours for fishing and hunting. And they did all of this in full knowledge of, because they were very connected to the city, they knew what was going on. And when they spotted new opportunities, when, for example, hotels started appearing in the 1850s on the sort of outer parts of Sydney to cater for the middle class in Sydney who wanted somewhere to go on the weekend, Aboriginal people were there offering them fishing tours and setting up camp near these places in order to take advantage of that. So it's a story of people who absolutely figured out a way to continue to live in Sydney without forgetting who they were.
How important is it to have this kind of history out there at this point in time? It's almost like we've reached a stage where we're ready to see things differently.
I think so, yeah. I think it's really important. I mean, if we want to understand why so many terrible things have happened, for example, in the 20th century, I think it's just been assumed for a long time that and particularly by Aboriginal people, and quite rightly, because this is the experience of their parents, grandparents and themselves and great-grandparents. It's been easy to imagine that this has been a sort of continuous history going right back to 1788. And I think it is important as a lesson for today too, because these policies didn't come from nowhere. People had to think them up and enact them. And it didn't have to be that way, because previously there was a much greater ability for Aboriginal people to move and live within their traditional country. And that's really important. But as you say, it's also just important to recognise the nuance of history, because if you live in Sydney, Sydney doesn't have a black history and a separate white history. It's got a history that's very entangled.
Historian Paul Irish, author of Hidden in Plain View, The Aboriginal People of Coastal Sydney, published by New South Books.